And welcome to Thrift Shop Biography. This is the one about Elton John. Thank you for listening. Hello.
Hello.
Are you dying to talk about this book?
Yes.
This week we have been reading the autobiography of Sir Elton John. What did you think of Sir Elton John before you read this book?
Well, I have seen Rocket Man, so I knew vaguely his whole life. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I saw it, I thought, oh, God, I'd like to read this man's full life. Mm-hmm. Because there's so many more stories in it, obviously, than in this film. And I reckon I came in musically at about I'm Still Standing.
Oh, okay.
When I was a kid, mm-hmm. I used to mime along to it on the back of the sofa, pretend to be playing the piano and stuff.
Yeah.
That was really fun. That was a fun video.
Yeah, for sure.
A fun song.
Yeah, I love that he even writes about the experience of making that video in this book.
Yes.
But we'll get to that.
But tell you something else, I would never be interested in seeing him in concert. It's
oh,
not
really?
My sort of music on the whole.
Mm-hmm.
How about you?
Love his music.
Do you?
Yeah. Hated the man.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I didn't know enough about him.
It's that weird thing that this podcast is making me realise. I get all my information from the media and they will portray somebody in a certain way. And I just kind of thought that Elton John was a bit up himself, a bit pompous, a bit bad tempered. I think these are all things that he kind of admits to in this book.
Yeah, you're not
but
wrong.
He's also filling in the gaps of why he might have been like that on that day. And of course, when you step back and you think about it, you think, yeah, this guy's under a lot of pressure a lot of the time. And the media show us the worst parts of him.
I just don't think I can follow the media as much as you because I haven't seen that much of him except when he sang Candle in the Wind at Diana's funeral, things like that. I don't see that much of him.
Oh, do you not? I guess I'm just addicted to pop culture and media.
Yeah, I know.
But I would say the accumulation of everything I have heard about Elton John from the 1970s kind of made me just think, what a dick.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
But love his music.
Right. Whereas I'm probably more the other way around. Now, I say I'm still not that bothered about his music, but I really like it. I really, really like the man.
Together, we are a super fan.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose so, yeah.
Well, we'll see. Let's talk about him and figure out how much I like him by the end.
Shall we?
So Elton John's not his name, is it?
No, it's Reg Dwight.
Reginald.
Yes.
Do you know a Reginald?
No, do you?
No, I don't think anybody was called Reginald after he was...
1947?
Yeah. Pinner, right?
Yeah.
Outer Borough of
London.
She's
actually very close to Bushy, where...
George Michael
was born and raised, and they became very firm friends.
They did. So he's got his mum and dad at home.
It's very average, middle-class, outer London.
Yeah. Suburbia. Is it suburbia?
Yeah, it is.
His dad's a bit distant, isn't he, when he realises that little Reggie is not the son he kind of would have hoped for?
Well, it never gives that particular reason.
You think your dad was just distant?
Could have been. He worked at the RAF. I think the key thing is they didn't like each other, his parents, so the relationship was crap.
Oh, okay.
So he probably made him not want to be at home and then take it all out on the kid as well.
Because let's face it, the mother doesn't sound like a very... Let's just be honest. Mother sounds like a total...
arsehole.
Yeah.
She does.
Yeah.
And it evolves during this book that she didn't really want kids or like kids.
Do you know what? I despaired almost reading everything about his mother.
Oh, no, she's toxic is the word.
Yeah, for sure.
A real toxic character.
But something that I think is very telling about Elton is how he kept her in her life almost until then. It's a Mariah Carey thing again.
Yes.
Mariah Carey's mum was a total bitch, but she never gave up on her. She kept going back and including her. It's just like, at what point do you just say no more?
Even when she's been utter cow at the end, when she dies, he's gutted.
Yeah.
Like, why? You'd have to be a person with a horrible parent to understand, I guess.
I don't know. It's almost like he chose the wrong parent to keep in his life. He did. His dad was very apathetic and didn't seem to care about him. And he does try and make amends later in life, but he just had to admit there was nothing there.
Yeah.
But I think if he wanted a parent, it was probably better to keep the apathetic one than the one who's just a total bitch.
Well, yeah, that's true. Because his dad went on to have four kids with another woman and they all adored him, he says.
Yeah.
Which is leaves him pretty bereft one way or the other.
Yeah. So already I'm discovering stuff about Elton John, which is making me readjust my feelings towards him.
Yeah, understanding where he's coming from, isn't it?
Yeah.
His mum beat him beat his ass with a wire brush when she was potty training him.
Oh, my God.
To the
God.
Point of bleeding. He was told this by his gran.
Yeah.
Who really didn't approve of her behaviour. But that's arrestable.
Yeah, she shouldn't have been. Well, you say it's arrestable. Back then, nobody really cared. You could hit your children.
There was no childcare and social justice.
Yeah.
But that's bad.
It's child abuse.
Yeah, she doesn't like kids.
Oh, and he also says that both his mum and his dad had terrible tempers.
Yeah.
And he says that he realizes that he's inherited that gene.
Terrible tempers,
so he totally
and massive
knows.
Sulks.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's an interesting realization that you can inherit a temper from your parents. Yeah. And I know it. Like myself, and I see it in other people.
Yeah.
So glad that he recognised that, and it's in the book for millions of people to read. You do inherit emotions as well as physical traits. You
That's
just
true.
Do. And unfortunately, some of those aren't entirely conducive to living a nice, happy life.
No.
But anyway, so he knows that. Anyway, look, let's talk about the piano. Yeah. When did he get his first piano?
Oh, it was his aunt's piano, and he first played it from when he was about three.
Yeah, he's a little child prodigy, isn't
he?
Yeah. Is he picking stuff out by ear?
It sounds like it, and he was just playing pub songs and sing-along songs and entertaining the family at
Because that's the songs
stuff.
That would have been popular at that point, right? This is just after the war, isn't it? So rock and roll hasn't happened yet. It's about to. So when he's first playing on the piano, it is those pub songs and sing-alongs.
Yeah.
And
it's 2 years after the Second World War finished. Yep, another post-war baby.
Yeah.
But I was going to say that he thought he was responsible for all the arguments that were happening in his home, which made him hate himself. Low self-esteem.
Yeah, I think that's more about his mum using him to make an argument. And I think it's a shame that that little boy thinks he is the reason for the arguments. In an objective way, he is. But it's only because his mum is using him as a pawn to argue with his dad, which is a horrible shame. And that little boy thinks it's himself. Mm. How did his dad feel about him playing the piano?
Oh, he said that's the only time he got the occasional pat on the back.
Right, yeah.
Maybe that's what spurred him on.
Spurred him on. Yeah. And so he, you know, he's playing all of these standards and stuff. And then quite soon the rock and roll is seeping in, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I know, that's right. And then his dad doesn't like rock and roll.
Yes.
Right.
His dad thinks rock and roll is going to turn him into a deviant person.
Yes.
Actually, it does.
It does. His dad was right.
But in the meantime, he's an ordinary person. He had an all right time at school, unbelievably.
Mm-hmm.
He said he was conspicuously ordinary. I like it. He says he got prescription glasses, which were just so he could read the blackboard. But he thought they made him look like Buddy Holly. So he wore them all the time and ruined his eyesight.
But he's a big Buddy Holly fan, big rock and roll fan. And in secret, when his dad's not around, he's learning to play rock and roll piano,
playing Little
right?
Richard and Jerry Lee Lewis and being amazed at how those people don't just play the piano, but they sort of
they perform
around it.
Yeah.
Leap off the stool.
Yeah.
Handstand.
Yeah. Oh, he also name checks Winifred Atwell as an influence as well. And I love that because I know old Winifred Atwell. And she's this lovely black lady who's like everyone's auntie. And she played these really nice party tunes. This is pre-rock and roll. And she was always grinning and she'd lean back and look at the audience
and
stuff. She was like massively famous pre-rock and roll.
Liberace before Liberace.
Yeah. And I love that Elton John was inspired by her as much as... Little Richard and Jerry Lewis.
And then, of course, Elvis has blown his mind.
Yeah.
It's weird because he's describing hearing Heartbreak Hotel, which a lot of people, it was the first time they've really stopped and went, whoa. And he's saying, really wants to tell us how amazing and exciting it was.
Hearing that.
Hearing it for the first time and the beginning of rock and roll. And he's, because we take it so for granted now what music is. And you know that thing where it's your own music.
Mm-hmm.
Young people had their own thing. Their parents didn't like it. It was really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
It was really dangerous. Yeah, I like being told that. I've heard
it a lot. And also how special that music is. Now, we relate, our generation relates in a certain way in that kids these days, everything's so omnipresent. If they want to listen to something that is on Spotify, the day it's released, you can listen to it as many times as you want. If you want to see the video, it's on YouTube. The day it's released, watch it as many times as you want. Now, our generation would have had to wait for Top of the Pops once a week to see, in the hope the video would be played. If it wasn't, you didn't even see it. And then you'd have to wait for it to be played on the radio until the record was released and you could go and buy it. But back when Elton John was a kid, well, nothing was on TV. No. It wasn't such a thing as a pop video. The radio wasn't readily playing rock and roll all the time. Mm. It's like you would hear it so infrequent. So you get this burst of some amazing magnificence. What was that?
Yeah.
And then you don't hear it again.
Yes.
And then you have to save up your money, go and get the record. And then you have this coveted thing that you come home and you play. It's would have blown his mind. Yeah.
He lived to buy that record and own it, and he did not grow out of that feeling.
And I love just the passion he has. Like he said, he was accruing this record collection and then he'd write everyone down in a book, including the catalogue number and the B-side.
He actually says, I'm an anorak, which is really cool. Yeah, he'd know all the record companies, and this record doesn't sound like that because those people use a slightly different vinyl mix. Yeah. And he said he was really boring to all his friends.
Yeah.
It's facts. I know that feeling.
Yeah. I used to write down the charts and stuff when they came on the radio. It's nice to know that Elton John did. And it's even nice to know that to this day he says, I don't care about how much money I'm making, but I make sure every day somebody tells me what chart position I'm in.
Yeah,
I love all that. He's a real nerd. We're nerds about it. He's one of us. He's one of us.
That made you like him a little bit more.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
When he's 11, he goes to Pinner County Grammar School. That's another normal school experience, so we don't have to talk about that.
No,
he doesn't talk about it.
So he's playing the piano at home and getting into rock and roll, but he starts gigging at quite an early age, doesn't he?
Actually, his mum and dad are divorced, and she'd met this bloke called Fred, who he liked to call him Fred Backwards, which is Durf.
Yeah, I love that.
It sounds ridiculous. By the end of the book, you're like, oh yeah, his mum and Durf.
I feel bad for Durf.
Oh, I do too, because the mum eventually ostracises Elton John, and he has to not see.
Just stuck in the middle of Durf.
Nice son-in-law.
Yeah,
have some exciting times.
Yeah, and I bet she was just a bitch all the time.
I don't think you can even blame it on any nameable illness or mental illness. She's just a bitch.
People like that do exist.
Yeah,
and unfortunately, Elton John had one as a mother.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's gigging. Right?
He's gigging, gigging in pubs. But Durf got him the jobs.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, because he got him hooked up to some Northwood hotel.
Right.
Pub.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And actually got him paid better because he went around with a tip jar.
Oh, that's so right. That's because the oldies in the pub, obviously he's even too young to drink in a pub.
Yeah.
But the people who are drinking love this kid who's amazing on the piano. Yeah, and he takes around a tip jar. So he's making decent money already. And he saves up to get an electric piano, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also he's playing covers and stuff, but then he really gets the pub going when he sings pub sing-along tunes. Mm-hmm. It's very sort of East End London, isn't it? Everyone's sitting around singing in the pub. I wish we did that more now.
I love that it would be. I love that a little Elton John, like 13-year-old Elton John, has got the whole pub singing around him.
Yeah, it's really good, isn't it?
Yeah.
But at some point, actually when he was 11, so 2 years previously...
Right.
He'd passed the exam to get into the Royal Academy of Music.
Okay.
And from that point on, he'd had every Saturday morning, he'd been at Royal Academy playing classical
piano.
Yeah, but
he was bored by it, wasn't he?
Well, he said, I understand this, so I got forced to play the piano, and I wasn't allowed to play any honky-tonk or blues or anything that I would have loved to play.
Yeah.
I was forced to play the exam pieces.
Yeah.
So whilst I totally understand that he wasn't being allowed to express himself, at the same time, it would have given him a great grounding in classical music, which he does say, if you listen to any of my music, you can hear the influence of that classical training. So actually, it was really good homework for him.
Right, yeah.
But nobody likes homework. He said when he goes back now to visit and he's on the board or whatever he is, he said it's all full of all sorts of music and everyone's free to express themselves and it sounds like a much nicer place.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, he said you couldn't even mention rock and roll and they'd go green.
Yeah, right, of course.
Yeah.
We have no realisation like the impact of rock and roll had.
No.
We were almost too young to see what punk did.
Exactly.
So the concept of rock and roll was just beyond us.
That's in 1958.
Yeah.
Aged 11, he went to Royal Academy of Music.
Yeah, it would have just
been classical.
Of course
he was just getting classical training.
Yeah.
That's how good he is at the piano at that point. Because they wouldn't take any old kid of 11. They saw potential.
Mm-hmm. In Little Reg.
Yeah.
So then he's playing in the pub, making money, gets an electric keyboard. Does he start writing at this point? Because he's like composing music, but he can't write lyrics.
I don't think he's writing much.
No.
But they form a band, Bluesology.
So Bluesology starts here. He's quite young still. Okay.
And a record a music industry person takes that band and says they can use them for when they bring American artists over to Britain.
Right.
So that, 'cause they wouldn't bring the whole band.
Yeah.
He becomes the backing band to amazing acts.
Long John Baldry again.
Crops up again. Also, I've got to say Patti LaBelle as well. People like that. Lee Dorsey.
Amazing.
Yeah. And then Long John Baldry pops up again.
Hey, he's in so many people's books.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just knew him as somebody who had one hit 100 years ago.
I'd never heard of him.
But he's very... Oh, really?
Yeah.
He's very present
in the
music scene.
But he's, I think, partly because Elton John says he's such a generous person.
Yeah.
And he saw talent.
Yeah.
And he promoted them.
Well, like Rod Stewart.
Yeah, he took Rod in.
So because of Long John Baldry, we have Rod Stewart and Elton John.
Yeah. Oh, also Elton John's name.
Oh,
the John is from Long John Baldry.
The John is from Long John Baldry.
That's amazing.
Yeah, isn't it?
And the Elton is from another bloke in the band.
Oh, yeah, who he thought was a cornet. Elton Dean.
Yeah.
Yeah. Elton John.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
Also, as much as the Royal Academy doing classical was in education, actually being able to play with these established musicians
amazing.
Night in, night out, and a variety of them,
yeah.
That's an education
yeah.
in itself.
Playing in a pub when there's fights and people hurling stuff at you and you have to escape out the window is another education. You need all of these aspects to become Elton John.
Yeah, you do. So Bluesology were... In terms of just a little gigging band, they were in full employment, weren't they?
Yeah, yeah. But then he says he realised we weren't going anywhere when he saw other backing bands that were better than them. Yeah, it's just they just weren't good enough.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't good enough. And when they sang their own music, they weren't as good as everyone else. They just weren't good enough.
So is this where he answered the advert for a record company, said any new artist come in for an audition?
Yeah.
And he went for an audition and they didn't want him.
Mm-hmm.
But on the way out... The guy said, here you are. Here's an envelope of lyrics that somebody else had sent in. Why don't you see what you can do with them?
And he said the desk was covered in envelopes. It looked like he's randomly picked an envelope.
Yeah.
He'll never know because he's replayed this a thousand times in his mind.
And the lyrics in that envelope were written by a teenager called Bernie Taupin. I mean, that does sound like a complete lottery moment.
It does.
Like he could have handed him any envelope, but for some reason, the young Elton John is handed an envelope with lyrics by Bernie Taupin.
Yeah.
Elton John takes them home, thinks, oh, these are good.
It's like he opens the page and the music comes out.
Mm-hmm.
It's like he says often, there's something magical about Bernie Taupin's lyrics that just pour music out of him. They just, they sing to him. A really winning combination.
Yeah, and he puts them to music straight away.
Yeah.
And that's a partnership that continues to this day.
To this day. Some of the time he says, when they were sharing house a bit later, Bernie wrote some lyrics over breakfast and handed them to me. And then I wrote your song within the hour.
Mm-hmm.
They're done.
That I think that proves the absolute connection that these two people who just happened to seemingly mystically be introduced to each other. It worked to the point where it was just so easy and so quick.
Yeah.
I'm sure it wasn't that easy, but, you know.
It doesn't sound like it. He says it is. It just flowed out of him.
Yeah, it just works for them.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's one point where they're in a French chateau and he writes three songs. He's got Bernie's lyrics. By the time everyone's got out of bed, he's written three songs, including Rocket Man. And the band were like, seriously, you've done it this morning? Really? It's great. It's really great. All the struggles he's had, the one thing he doesn't struggle with is music.
Yeah. Ain't that the truth?
Yeah.
Yeah. So him and Bernie are writing songs, but they're for other people, right? And they're trying to do them to orders. This is back in the days of like Tin Pan Alley, where we had singers like Petula Clark and, I don't know, Tom Jones and Cilla Black, and you'd write songs for them. Well, you'd write songs in the hope that they would want to sing them. And so they were kind of writing songs for mass appeal, the pop market, and they were doing, but people weren't picking up on their songs, right? But they were also writing other songs which were a bit less poppy.
It's just what they wanted to do.
What they wanted to do. And I think it was one of the A&R men or the guy at the record label who said to them, do you know what? Stop writing these songs for other people.
Yeah.
Concentrate on writing songs for yourself. But they were worried because they were, well, how are we going to make money? You made money selling songs to pop stars.
Yeah.
And they knew the stuff they wanted to write for themselves, the pop stars probably wouldn't want. Then this guy gave them 600 quid.
Well, was it when they started recording at night in the recording studio? So after they'd finished work.
Right.
Because they were session players as well at that point. Okay. And he was also doing cover albums.
Oh my God, I love this. Those old terrible Top of the Pops albums that you buy in Woolworths. Yeah. It didn't have the original people on.
Because you didn't have to pay the money, the royalties or whatever.
Elton John played on them.
And was singing.
And he said that like he literally loved it so much. It was always so much fun to get in the studio and do these cover versions that even after he became famous, he went back to do some of the Top of the Pops albums. I love that.
It's brilliant.
That made me love him a little bit more.
Yeah.
Knowing that he'd love doing the Top of the Pops albums. Because there was nothing worse when you were a music fan if your gran bought you a Top of the Pops album. It's like, what is this? I want the real thing. Little did you know, Elton John was doing them.
I bet when that book got published, everyone was rushing to the archives trying to see if they could identify.
But so they were after hours in the studio, they were putting together some of
their own songs. Music, and then they got busted and they thought they were all fired.
Right.
And the bloke went, do you know what? You need to make your own album. They obviously thought this is good.
Yeah.
And just make your own album and then gave them money to do it.
They gave them the money to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so they did. They recorded as themselves, writing songs for themselves.
Yeah.
And they recorded an album. Is this Empty Sky, the album? And it didn't do anything, did it, on release?
No.
It was very low key. And they thought, oh, no, that's it.
But it gave them some material to play live.
Right.
And that was the key thing, because it gave them their own songs so they could start doing gigs. And, of course, the energy they had and stuff. Well, he put together the band.
Yeah,
and then he had a band, and then he's a leading man and starts to become
brilliant live performer.
Star.
But I think they made Empty Sky.
It is Empty Sky, yeah.
Yeah, and it didn't sell very well. And they thought, oh, no, that's it. But then the guy gave them more money to make another album, right?
Yeah.
So they've got the beginnings of a music career here.
Yeah.
No big fireworks or anything. And is it here where the record label boss wants them to go to America?
Yes,
but actually they don't want to.
Dick James
says, go to America. And Elton John's like, we haven't even cracked it here yet.
Yeah,
you're crazy.
Doesn't want to go. But their first gig's at the Troubadour, which wouldn't seem that important, except they are excited. Oh, this gig's going to be amazing. The Beach Boys are going to come and watch you. You're going to get introduced by Neil Young. All this stuff's going to happen. And he said, to their credit, all of it happened. But he started getting the fear, which he does a lot. He seems to be having a tantrum, but it's actually because he's got no self-esteem and he's bottling it. And he's, oh, I'm going home. This is a running theme. I'm leaving. I'm leaving. I'm running back.
What I found amazing about this trip to America is they haven't really done much in the UK. But when they said take him to America, they really invested in
him. Yeah, they did.
And they really put him out there. Even without massive record sales in England yet, they recognised his talent and thought, we have something here. This kid
is
worth investing in. I say kid. What is he? Early 20s at this point?
Yeah, he must be.
Yeah. They're investing in him as an artist. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't really look the part, let's be honest.
He's as likely a pop star as Phil Collins. He became more likely, though, because of his clothes.
Yes.
Because they're so important,
as
usual.
Yeah, they really are.
And this time the music came first, and the clothes came second. And he went...
Oh, my God. He went to Mr. Freedom on King's Road, which became the Vivienne Westwood shop.
Yes. So this bloke, Tommy Roberts, actually had his shop in the same building, 430 King's Road, where 6 months later, it said when he moved out of his shop, he left the front half run by his friend, which mainly faded jeans and stuff, and the back half was taken over by Vivienne Westwood and Malcolm McLaren.
Everything is connected.
It's ridiculous.
That shop is just, even before Vivienne Westwood
got there,
it's
something magical about that actual space, isn't there? Yeah.
No wonder she kept it as her own. It still belongs to her.
Do you know what? I really do want to make a tourist visit to that shop.
Let's go.
It needs to be done. So, he got the craziest clothes and the brightest things, and a shirt with stars on it and an orange dungarees and platform shoes. Yeah. So that's where it started.
I think that was a bit of a shock to the audience, wasn't it?
Yeah, and his shoes with wings on. I mean, this scene is in Rocket Man, the film. And he describes it, and I really understand how they made it like they did it, because in the film, don't know if you've seen it.
No. Don't like Elton John, why would I watch Rocket
Man? Well, he's playing the piano, and it's all, well, he describes it in the book that he's playing, he's nervous, he looks into the audience, he sees a hero of his called Leon Russell.
I
hate to admit, I'd never heard of him now.
No, I didn't.
I've looked him up now, and he's obviously amazing.
Yeah.
But This bloke's got long hair and a moustache and just looks like a Wild West character.
Uh-huh.
And he's just staring. He's obviously not a particularly chirpy bloke. And he's just staring at Elton John and he's his hero. So he's playing, he's going, shit, this isn't going well. Is he staring at me because he doesn't like it? Oh, my God, I've got to do something more. I've got to win him over. And because of that, he just takes off.
Uh-huh.
And goes mad, kicks the stool away, does a handstand on the piano, mm-hmm. goes, gives it his all, and it's the best gig they've ever done. In Rocket Man, if I'm allowed a spoiler, he actually takes off and floats above the stage. Because it's a really stylized film. Uh-huh. Now I've read this book, I know that Elton John made that film. He's the man right. behind that film.
Right. Uh-huh.
So he's saying, this is how I felt.
How I felt.
And that completely comes across when he describes the gig. He took off and flew and became the man he remains in that gig, mm-hmm. in that moment. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Without any drugs, any alcohol.
Oh, my goodness.
Just
yeah,
pure there euphoria.
There was a time when Elton John didn't do drugs.
He didn't need them. That's the sad part.
By the time of the second album, so they were kind of known
yeah.
for being singer-songwriters, kind of a bit muso and stuff, and that's how they thought their career would go. I'm talking about Elton John and Bernie Taupin.
Yeah, yeah.
Rocket Man is released as a single to promote mm-hmm. the album, and it's a massive hit, mm. and it goes to number two, and all of a sudden Elton has teenage girls screaming, and he realises, oh no, now he's a pop star,
yeah.
like Donny Osmond is, and he'd never expected that. But that is increasing quite quickly, their audience base and the people who are buying the records. And he also then becomes more of a pop star, more of a showman.
Mm.
He kind of became just more theatrical and expressive, didn't
yeah.
he?
Well, at first he was finding his own clothes, and then he got Bob Mackie on board. Who's the same person who came into design Cher? Because
yeah,
he's the right. absolute, he's the pop star of designing stage clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Look what he did for Cher.
Amazing.
Yeah, and he did the same for Elton John, mm-hmm. just brought all the feathers and the bling and the crazy stuff.
So when you see Vegas. Those pictures of Elton John where he has a massive glasses and the real outlandish costumes, that's Bob Mackie. I didn't know that.
It's amazing. God, have you ever looked up Bob Mackie's work?
No.
Just the illustrations alone are so beautiful.
Oh, really?
Yeah, look it up.
Okay.
He's amazing.
I will.
Yeah.
In the 70s, he has like 4 albums that go to number one in America. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's shifting a lot.
Yeah, because they were knocking them out, weren't they?
That's another thing.
Yeah.
They're only like doing 2 in a year.
Yeah, yeah.
You just don't get that now. Yeah. They'd like one every
in
2 years.
In 1971, really. Didn't they knock out 4 albums? Yeah, 4 albums.
Wow. So the Goodbye Yellow Brick Road album is absolutely massive. And it's got to the point in America already where he has his own private jet. Also, he's already feeling the pressure of this enormous fame because he says that he gets on this amazing plane that's kitted out with bedrooms and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody's knocking on the door at one point. I think it's his birthday. Somebody's yeah. knocking on his door. He's like, leave me alone. And they're like, no, come on out and see us. And Elton John says that he throws this massive hissy fit, saying, I don't want to see anyone, leave me alone. And they keep on. And he's getting really, really angry. And eventually he comes out. And it's because Stevie Wonder is on the plane. And he's singing
happy birthday. Awkward.
Yeah.
Feels like a twat. Yeah.
Interesting. Another interesting bit about Stevie Wonder. So after the next album, after Yellow Brick Road, is Caribou. Mm. And they go to Caribou to record it in the Rocky Mountains. And Stevie Wonder comes along and he says they all go out on snowmobiles.
Yeah.
And Stevie Wonder gets on his own snowmobile. And he insists on getting on it on his own and just rides it around. And Elton John's like, well, this guy is blind.
Okay.
Go on, conspiracy theory.
Well, no, not at all, because years ago, and we need to reread this if we can find it.
Are you
going to
say Boy George?
No.
Oh.
Ray Charles. I read Ray Charles's autobiography years ago.
Yeah.
And he's what he can do. Blind.
Oh.
Because the senses you have. I don't know how you can hear a tree in the snow, but somehow he drove himself around, Ray Charles. But, I mean, it was when there were many less cars. It was a long, long time. Like in the 50s, he actually drove his
own
car.
So he must have had some visibility.
I don't think he did. I mean,
you can't drive a car.
Not all the time, but in the neighbourhood and stuff. It's astounding. Right, we need to read Ray Charles' book. It's the most amazing things I ever learned about what blind people can do.
Right, here's the thing. There is a man who they call the Batman, who's been blind since birth, and he can ride a mountain bike at speed through a forest.
Yeah.
And it's because they call him the Batman, because you know how bats fly about
exactly.
at night.
Exactly. You've got other senses.
He does that clicking thing that bats do. And when you click, he can, when the click rebounds off the trees,
echo. Yeah,
he can hear it. And he was teaching a young blind boy to do it. So, yeah, no, you're right. There are other things.
Yes.
But do you think that's what Stevie Wonder's doing when he's on a snowmobile?
No idea. But his other senses are working in ways that we have no idea.
Yeah. Or he can see. This is quite an important time in Elton John's life because it's during the recording of this album that he goes into a room and he sees John Reed, who is his manager and his first boyfriend, hunched over a pile of white powder.
Yes.
And Elton John goes, what's that?
Can I have some of that?
Yeah. And he's a bit nervous of it. And John Reed says, oh, it'll make you feel good. And he takes it and he hates it.
Hates it, goes and beats it, comes back. Can
feels
have some
quite
more.
Good.
Yeah. And it never stops for 16 years.
God. I hated reading that. He really gets gripped by that addiction quickly.
He's a very addictive person.
Yeah. Because it's not just cocaine he's addicted to. It's like drinking and food as well, you know?
Yeah. He's got a lot of he's a very addictive person. But that's, it's a shame.
Yeah, it gets out of control really quickly. But do you know what? That whole John Reed relationship isn't a good one.
No.
The personal side of it isn't, although John Reed is a very good manager.
And it's his first love. I have to say that if it wasn't John Reed, it would have been someone else. It's rife in those circles.
I hated reading that it was his first love, and Elton John kind of wanted a loving, monogamous relationship, but John Reed was just out there having the best time putting it about, and it kind of broke out in John's heart.
Yeah.
And then to top it all off, John Reed's an angry, violent bastard as well.
Yeah. To the point where he actually spent a month in prison in New Zealand because he went around hitting everyone.
I know.
That's not good.
No, it's not good. But, you know, Elton John's in his first love of his life. He's putting up with it.
Yeah.
But also, they are kind of linked quite heavily at this point because he's
having
his manager.
Having an amazing time as well.
Yeah.
But it takes John Reed to hit Elton John for him to go, that's it.
Yeah.
The first time he hit him, he called it all off, which is very good.
Yeah.
Very
was that at the party? It's awful. He's invited all these people around for a costume party, and then John Reed just punches Elton John in the face.
Mm.
So Elton John goes into the bathroom and cleans himself up because he's got a split lip, and then he just comes out and pretends nothing has happened because all these people are arriving. Mm. You know, this whole book, actually, no, I started by saying I didn't like Elton John that much. I'm really beginning, not like, does it come from a place where I feel sorry for him, but it's kind of like, God, this bloke went through a lot.
Yeah,
actually.
He did go through a lot. Yeah.
You know, I realise I didn't like him for petty things that were reported in the press. Now I should know better than that at this point.
Yeah, you should. I think you're going to have to watch Rocket Man now because it's brilliant.
Oh, okay.
It's absolutely brilliant.
Uh-huh. So Elton and John Reed have split up. And of course, then Elton looks further afield. And of course, he's falling for straight people.
Yeah.
And he's propping himself up with more cocaine.
Yeah.
He's already in the throes of a serious cocaine addiction. He's relying
on it.
Yeah.
But I was going to say, he's not just a victim of falling in love with straight men, because at the same time, he says there's a whole lifetime of falling in love with men, saying to them, give your life up and follow me everywhere.
Oh.
And then getting bored of them and just sending them home.
As much as I'm saying that I like Elton John because of this book, actually, no, there are bits I don't like in this book, and
there's
this
a
is
lot
one
of that.
Of them.
A very Rod behaviour, in fact, their best mates.
Very Rod behaviour.
He treats men a lot like Rod treats women. And he even mentions it, says, just like Rod, women would find out they were done when they find a plane ticket on their pillow.
God,
and he does the same.
Yeah.
He'd get his manager to just fly them back to Australia or whatever, where they'd left their whole lives for him.
Because
he'd get bored of them.
Yeah, and Elton John even says, I know it's disgusting behaviour.
Yeah.
So I'm glad he realises that. But I guess at the time, when you are Elton John, you can have any good-looking young blonde man to take drugs and have
blonde,
sex.
Blonde, were they?
They were all blonde.
Were they?
Yeah.
I missed that fact.
Like Rod Stewart.
Oh, my God.
They're kind
they
of
were
the same
two,
person.
Two of them. Peace.
Separated at
birth.
Yeah, he treated them appallingly, basically, because it's that thing, like you were saying in the Rod podcast. The Rod Pod. That these women think they're the one.
Yeah.
And they're being wined and dined and seduced
showered
by a famous rock star. And then all of a sudden it just stops.
Yeah, it must have broken a lot of these people.
Yeah, it did.
Freddie came into his life around that
Freddie
time.
Freddie who?
Mercury!
Yeah.
The other Queen of England. And it just sounds amazing. Well, everyone knows this. What an amazing character.
Yeah.
A hoot, he called him, in fact.
Of course. I just get that Elton, Freddie, Rod,
yeah,
just all hanging out together is probably the funniest.
Yeah, time. Just giving them all the stories, all the bitchiness. Like,
they were quite a bitchy trio, and they gave each
track queen
other
names. Yeah. Talking about Michael Jackson. Oh, he made me go see the llamas, dear. Have you seen what I'm wearing, dear? I can't go near your llamas.
In his white suit.
I can't do it in this. Yeah. And he called Michael Jackson
Mahalia. Oh, yeah, Mahalia Jackson.
And he's Melina.
Yeah. And what are Rod and Elton as Sharon and...
Sharon and Phyllis. Beryl.
Phyllis, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that story where he says you couldn't get Rod to dance at all. until you... But then... He discovered that if you give Rod poppers, if he sniffs poppers, you couldn't get him off the dance floor. He'd only come off the dance floor because he had this poppers called cum. And he'd come off the dance floor to go, got any more of that cum, Sharon? It's great. And then also the time when they went to Brazil on holiday together and they thought it'd be funny to dress up in Navy outfits. So they hired some Navy costumes, went out into this massive party parade in Brazil and found the whole Navy had come to town and they just got lost. Good times with the Sharon and Phyllis.
They had fun for sure, yeah. Didn't they? Now, this is around the time where Rolling Stone came to interview him,
yeah.
Right?
And 1976.
And Elton John knew that the journalist was an out gay man and he expected him to ask about his own sexuality and stuff. And he just decided he was going to be very open about it.
Yeah.
He admitted that he was bisexual in the interview. Yeah. And that went into Rolling Stone.
But he actually thought he was at that point. He was so confused by his sexuality still. He'd had a relationship with a woman.
Mm-hmm.
He actually then had one again. So he wasn't lying.
And you're right, because there's that time when he was in the pub with Long John Baldry. And weren't they all saying to him, oh, you're gay?
Yeah, it's because he was about to marry that woman and they're like, don't do it, you're gay. I'm not, yes you are. And then everyone around the pub started joining in. Yes you are, all sorts of people, including Cindy Birdsong from The Supremes.
Oh my God, how funny.
Yeah, imagine that. Surreal, isn't it?
Yeah. So yeah, you're right actually.
Yeah, it's true. So he wasn't sure.
Yeah.
I mean, he is now, but he wasn't then. It's around this time he meets Elvis. That's the next thing that happens.
Oh, I hated that.
It's really sad because he takes his mum, because his mum had introduced him to Elvis.
Yeah.
Musically. And then he's got all that entourage around him, Elvis does. All of his cousins and friends and everybody's so called there for support. And they all part and there's Elvis looking like death.
Oh, he said he looked grey and bloated.
Yeah.
I kind of know exactly because those last
too.
Pictures of Elvis.
He looks in his eyes and his eyes are hollow and his soul's gone.
Yeah, he says he's almost incoherent as well. Wow. And all those people around him are still pushing him to get on
Nobody's
and do a show.
Nobody's actually supporting him.
Did Elvis ever go to rehab?
I don't think he did.
No, he didn't.
Why would you when your manager's the one pushing the drugs on you to get you on stage? And when they went away, he said, the last thing I thought I'd feel when I met Elvis was pity.
Yeah.
It's devastating. His mum said he'll be dead in a year, and he was. So people say, well, you don't know that you have to step in to support him. Yes, Elton John's mum knew he was going to be dead. So at that point, you want to go, please, will somebody help Elvis? Will you take him to rehab? He's going to die if you don't help this man. He's only 42. He'd have been 41 then. It's terrible. It's really, really criminal to let that man die.
And that could have happened to Elton John.
It could have, actually, but he... I was going to say he had more people looking out for him, but no, he ended up taking himself to rehab.
It was a partner which kind of forced the issue.
Yes.
It happens a bit later.
I think that's a really nice story,
but...
Yeah, well, we can leap to it.
Shall we leap to it? All right, so... Elton John is going out with this guy called Hugh, and they're having a great time doing drink and drugs and partying. And then one day, Hugh says, I can't do this anymore. It's too much excess.
Mm.
And Elton John, his caring partner, went ballistic.
Yeah.
He was furious that he wanted to give up because Hugh was his partner in crime. And so as long as Hugh was doing it, Elton could do it.
It just reflects straight back onto him. It obviously hit a nerve. So, yeah, he went to rehab in America. Elton John went to visit him and flipped out in the rehab going, yeah. What are you doing here? This is stupid.
I think they did break them up when Hugh put the brakes on and went to rehab. And so this is like a period of time had passed. But I think it was part of Hugh's recovery was to get like your ex-partner or whatever in with the counsellor and talk about it.
Yeah.
I love. This is actually quite funny. Part of the exercise was that they had to write a list of things about each other which they disliked, and Elton read his list first about Hugh, and it was things like, you never put the CDs back in the cases, you walk out of a room when you don't turn the light off, just things that he found annoying. And when it was Hugh's time to speak his list about what he didn't like about Elton,
I've written his list down because it's really important, these points: drug addict, alcoholic, food addict, bulimic, sex addict, codependent. Is there anything else left? And now John sits there and goes, yes, I am. Doesn't deny it. It's the first time he accepts.
And that was the start of his recovery.
It was.
Amazing.
Yeah. It is really good.
He's taking it so seriously ever since.
Yeah. Oh, then he gets addicted to recovery, basically.
Yeah.
Because he says he got addicted to meetings.
Yeah.
He went to 1,400 meetings in 3 years.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes he went to three a day. That's how you can get up to those numbers.
Well, he had to go to one for alcohol, one for drugs, one for food.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what? I reckon seeing Elvis probably had something to do with that.
Yeah, won't it?
To see one of his idols completely crushed by the grip of addiction.
Not aided by anybody, not encouraged or helped by anyone around him, all these people around you that are
but
just
sponging
off you.
Yeah, his like coke habit was so out of control. I mean, not least when he was filming the I'm Still Standing video, right?
And I love that story.
Go on, tell me about it, the
so
Duran
good.
Duran.
Okay, that I'm Still Standing video is really camp and brilliant.
It's an iconic video,
it's
but when
great.
You find out what happened behind the scenes, it makes it even better.
Yeah, it was filmed in Cannes. Yeah. They were kind of on a boardwalk by the beach. Arlene Phillips was choreographer. Yep. She was visibly stunned at his dance moves.
What, not in a good way.
Not in a good way. And they take a break at some point. So John Reed's in the video and he's dressed as a clown, incidentally. He takes an hour break, goes into the hotel. When he walks into the lobby, there's Duran Duran at the bar.
Of course.
Who he vaguely knows. We're all pop stars of the 80s. Yeah. So they go, all right, Elton, have a drink with us. Oh, I'm on a break. All right. Well, I don't really know what to drink. I'm not mad for alcohol. And it says Simon Le Bon. I always thought it was John Taylor because I know this story. It's legendary. It says, have a vodka martini. It's a really nice drink. He has one. Loves it. Has eight in an hour. And then a couple of lines of coke.
Oh, my word.
In an hour, and then goes back onto the set, takes all his clothes off, punches John Reed in his clown face.
Yeah, that's one good thing about it.
Yeah, he said he's never hit anyone before or since, but if he was going to hit someone, it should have been John Reed.
Good.
Correct.
Yeah.
John Reed has a fit, gets into the Bentley. Was it the Bentley that he'd driven to drives all the way to the port, gets the ferry to Dover. And then breaks down, has to call the AA, dressed as a clown with blood all down his face. It's more drama than the video.
And then doesn't Elton then go to the hotel room and goes to the wrong room and smashes it
up? Good Lord, yes, because he wakes up in the morning and the manager goes, come and look at my room. And it's flattened. The only thing that isn't flattened is the bed, including the manager's cowboy hat, which is stomped flat, his favourite hat. And Elton goes, what happened? He said, you happened, Elton.
Oh, wow.
And then they sit down and just laugh till they cry, because what else can you do? And he doesn't remember a thing about it. Not a thing. He has to be told even about the punch. He didn't even know why his hand hurt.
Wow.
So, and he said, you wouldn't believe the lesson I learned from that. From that day on, vodka martini was my drink and I had to have it every day. I had to have it before everything I did. So rather than learn from you...
to never touch vodka martini again.
That's his new thing.
Wow.
Good Lord. Honestly, he does this all the time. Because he has a spliff and then realises he loves it. And within a week, he's got a spliff roller employed.
Oh, yeah.
That walks around rolling his own spliffs and carries a shoebox full of them at all times.
Can we just talk about his dad a minute? He's been very, very absent. Yeah. And Elton John heard that his dad was ill at this time. And he offered to pay for the operation and stuff. And his dad wouldn't let him.
Yeah.
And then it says that his dad never saw him play live.
Yeah.
That must hurt so much. Whatever kind of relationship you have with your parents, if all of a sudden you're the biggest thing in music,
yeah,
and you've been the biggest thing in music for a few years, yeah, and your dad doesn't even... Your dad can't say, oh, I didn't know that.
It's almost like everything he's doing is to get his dad's attention, yeah, and his dad still won't look...
Oh, it's, that really...
It's tragic. Well, I mean, can I leap ahead now to Billy, yeah, Elliot? Because, yeah, he says when they went to watch Billy Elliot the film, and they just went to watch it as punters, he was heaving with sobs,
yeah,
because it's the elusive happy ending he never got. Billy Elliot being about a gay dancer boy, a gay boy growing up in a working class
home. Is Billy Elliot gay?
Oh, okay. I shouldn't say that. It's not about him being gay. He's a boy who wants to be a dancer. He does turn out gay at the end, but that's incidental because you see him...
I didn't know that.
He ends up in Swan Lake in the film, and it's right, just right at the end when he's a grown-up. It just cuts to him being a grown-up dancer in Swan Lake and the dad's sitting with his boyfriend,
okay,
watching.
Uh-huh.
And his dad's accepted everything, okay, about him.
I didn't, so know that. I didn't know that.
Kind of incidentally turned, yeah, out to be gay, but it's more about a boy wanting to be a dancer in a working-class family,
yeah. Yeah,
just wanting to be something that doesn't fit... Yeah, and Billy Elliot, that's a happy ending. The dad accepts everything. And he never... the fact he's heaving with sobs is...
Yeah.
It, like, he has to be helped out of the cinema. He can't walk even. You know, it's... Of course it's all about that.
Yeah.
You know, it's a huge amount about... And then David Furnish... leaping to David Furnish.
Yeah,
but at
we
that
all
point,
know. David Furnish is his husband, by the way, if you don't know.
At this point, on, yeah, yeah, yeah. He hits his idea to make the musical of Billy Elliot,
yeah,
which then he co-writes the music.
Yeah.
For, so it's a huge part of his life and a cathartic experience, I'd imagine, to be able to tell a story about somebody who, a boy who it actually worked out for.
Elton didn't get very lucky with his parents.
No, he didn't.
One interesting thing to me is that Elton gets involved in football.
Yeah.
Watford FC. I thought it was a bit of a weird sidestep for him to go into that world.
Is that him trying to connect with his dad again,
yeah,
though?
I think it's like, as much as Alan Sugar was,
yeah,
bought the
I
football
so
team to connect with his children,
yeah,
yeah, I think Elton John
to impress his dad.
To impress his dad, because they used to go.
Yeah. Plus, he absolutely loves football. He's passionate
he loved
about
it. But this is the interesting thing. Now, this wouldn't happen. Now, this is still the 1970s,
yeah,
before we have the Premier League and,
yeah,
£20 million transfers of,
yeah,
of,
yeah,
players and stuff. Elton John said football really grounded him. He said nobody kissed his,
yeah,
ass.
True.
He would just go there and he would get relief from the music industry,
yeah,
by being in the,
yeah,
football
even
industry.
Though he'd walk in platforms and pink hair and,
oh,
whatever.
And the opposing team, yeah, would do songs about Elton John takes it up the arse and stuff,
yeah,
which is
and
funny,
he just laughed it,
yeah,
off.
Because it is funny and he,
yeah.
And so he's in that world to get relief from the pop. I mean, that wouldn't,
yeah,
happen now because the football industry has become this multi-million pound pressurised,
yeah,
industry with celebrity
mind
players.
Mind you, it might still backstage. You know, they
you
still
think?
Might treat people normally. Yeah.
Do you think? What,
yeah,
I know. Have you never seen footballers' wives?
No, I actually haven't. But the actual people who run football are still blokes, just being blokes with other blokes. So they might still treat him normally.
I don't know.
Also, they didn't want him drinking. They said, "Don't, you can't behave like that here.
Yeah,
this,
yeah,
is serious."
Uh-huh.
That's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, 10 years, he actually says, I think he actually says the word, Watford saved my life. Watford Football Club saved my life, which isn't something you hear every day.
No, it really isn't.
No.
So in the 1980s, the Too Low for Zero is out. It's his first album in a long time, which has gone big.
Yeah.
By the way, do you know that album? I love it. Do you know what's your favourite album song?
I only
song?
Know
do you
the hits.
One? Well, I guess that's why they call it the blues.
Oh, probably I'm Still Standing would be mine.
Yeah, well, they're both on Too Low for Zero.
Oh,
this album.
Really?
Yeah, and it's on this album where there's a lady working, mm-hmm, at the recording studio and she's part of the team.
She worked for Prince.
Renata.
It said she worked for Prince.
I wonder what she worked on.
I don't know, but it made her instantly cool in my books.
Yeah, right. And so she's an engineer,
yeah,
on this album. And I love the way Elton John talks about her.
Yeah,
and
it's really nice because I always thought it was a gimmick, his marriage.
Yeah, no, he thought at that time he wanted to.
Yeah, I didn't know
her.
That. He,
yeah,
it was genuine. He fell in love with this woman.
The only reason you don't know that is because of the way it was reported in the press. Well, the reaction of everyone around them,
yeah,
when
because
they,
everyone knows he's gay.
Yeah,
so of course we'd get confused,
yeah,
by that.
So it's nice to find out it was actually based on genuine feelings. So they kind of developed this relationship. She would stay a bit later in the studio and so would he, and they would talk, and she was very down to earth.
Mm.
And they just had a connection, and they would go out to dinner. And there was a point where Elton John thought, Christ, I think I'm falling for her. And then he rationalized that whole thing. Because obviously, when you're gay and growing up gay in the 60s and the 70s, you are constantly told stuff like, you know, you're probably gay because you haven't met the right woman yet. Mm-hmm. And these are the things that are going through his head.
Yeah, he's telling himself as well, because he's constantly failing with gay relationships. Mm-hmm. So he's thinking maybe he could succeed with the straight mm-hmm. one. So it's worth a try.
And it's a woman that he really likes.
Yeah.
And then they go out to dinner and he asks her to marry him, and she laughs because she just assumes it's a joke, because I'm guessing she knows that he's gay.
Yeah, everybody knows that at this point.
So they leave it, and then they go to Australia and they go out to dinner again. They're on tour, like everyone's there, including Elton John's current blonde boyfriend, by the way, who I think he sent home twice already. Yeah, anyway, goes out with Renata again, asks her to marry him again, and this time she says yes. And he says, right, let's just do it really quickly, because I think it was Valentine's Day. And so within a matter of days, they announced it in the bar to everyone, yeah. and everyone, he
including
says, everyone is
boyfriend.
Aghast.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how his boyfriend found out.
Yeah.
That is terrible.
Yeah. And then they got married fast, didn't they?
Yeah, within days.
I wrote this down. He invites Rod Stewart to his wedding. Mm-hmm. He can't come. He gets a message from Rod's management that says, you may still be standing, dear, but the rest of us are on the fucking floor.
I mean, it was just a shock to everyone.
Yeah. At least he was honest about it, because you don't go, oh, well done, congratulations. You go, hey.
Yeah.
You would.
So they get married.
Yeah. And then he says, I can't talk about this anymore because in the divorce settlement, we agreed to not talk about our marriage.
I love that. And do you know what? She's never spoken publicly about it. And she must have had money thrown at her to divulge the details of their marriage. And she never has. And what I loved reading in the book, actually, you kind of think, okay, Elton John has paid her to keep quiet. But actually, he upholds his side of that agreement in saying that he's not going to talk about her.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, he needs to say that he married her.
Yeah.
But he's not going to talk about the details of it.
Yeah.
I love that in this mad world of celebrity where everybody has a price, actually, these nice relationships do exist.
Yeah, it's true. And the one thing he does say is that I know I broke her heart. So that's just a tiny bit of an insight. So she believed in it. She obviously believed in it.
It's just a difficult situation, isn't it? Because obviously, you know, she would have known he was gay and stuff. And
but
you kind of think that
bisexual.
Yeah, when
they
you have a connection
each other.
With someone,
he wanted kids as well. Yeah. So. But he ended up having kids, which is something that back in the day you couldn't think you could do without.
Without a woman.
And
like
now
this
you
day,
can.
Yeah, because you just pay and rent out a woman's womb, so you can have
That's
children.
That's correct. But great. Amazing.
Is it great?
Well, yeah, I think it is, yeah.
Okay.
I know what you're saying, but yes, I think it is great, yeah. It's amazing that you can...
That you can rent out a woman's womb to have a baby?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, this is a whole other issue, but I love that men, or two women or two men, can find ways to be parents. In this day and age, of course it's amazing. You know it's amazing.
I don't. I think people who have children, I think heterosexual people who have children are stupid. What are you talking about?
Oh.
We don't need
all
any more.
People that make more people.
There's too many people on this planet.
I know this.
You know, go and adopt a kid.
Yeah, but then don't.
One.
Why should just straight people? Anyway, it's them as parents is it's fantastic. It's such a lovely thing to see his whole journey.
Oh,
he ends up being able to be married. To a man, married, and then being able to be parents.
Yeah, it's the least interesting part of the book.
Fair enough.
No, it's just, I don't want to read about him having kids. How boring.
Well, yeah, I mean, once they've done, I like the concept of it, yes. I don't need to know the day-to-day upbringing of kids, no.
Yeah.
Not interesting.
Kids are just not interesting. So, we need to talk about the fact that the Sun newspaper really went for Elton in the 80s in a big homophobic way. And they were inventing stories that Elton John was having orgies at his mansion filled with rent boys, and none of it was true. The details of stuff that I think one of them said, and Elton was wearing a pair of tight leather shorts. He's like, I would never wear a pair of tight leather shorts. They were literally making it all up.
Yeah.
And so it upset him, actually. And of course, this is also the backlash against gay people in the ages post-AIDS.
Yes.
They finally were given something. The press were given something to beat gay people with, as if they needed it. Elton John was arguably the most high-profile gay man.
And they were trying to bring him down.
And Elton John wanted to sue, but Mick Jagger told him not to because they had sued, and he said they went for them in other ways and caused trouble. But Elton John was like, I can't, it's upset me so much. It's a principle here, I have to sue them. So he did sue them, and they really came for him. When he sued them, they started publishing more stories, more outrageous stories. And so Elton John sued again.
Yeah.
And then they had him followed. They were bugging his hotel room. Yeah, they really went for him. It was all lies. In the end, Elton John had 17 libel cases against the Sun newspaper. And he said at times he was really riled up and angry and ready for the fight. And the next day it absolutely crushed him.
Depressed,
and he would go into his room on his own. Oh, this really broke my heart. He said he felt like the little boy retreating to his room when his mum and dad were fighting.
Yeah, yeah.
But only now he had an endless supply of booze and drugs and food.
Yeah.
And that poor man. It's weird, actually. I never think, when you see those stories in the press, even now, you kind of think, oh, a big celebrity is used to it by
people?
Now.
No.
Yeah,
because
there's always a personal cost there.
Absolutely.
It was awful. But they settled out of court, right? I mean, didn't he get like a proper apology?
Part of the settlement was a full page apology on the front page of the Sun.
That's
got
unprecedented.
Yeah, he got that. Elton.
I'm even amazed they agreed to that.
Yeah, I am. But that's what you should have in your clause.
Almost every day in the Sun newspaper, somewhere near the back, a little tiniest apology paragraph, there's an apology for something.
It's not on, is it?
No, because nobody reads that.
They're not held accountable. So good on him for doing that.
Yeah.
And it got the nation on his side, actually, because he's being bullied and he won.
It did, but do you know what? You think it would have some kind of signal, some kind of change within the media, within the Sun newspaper. They
of course not.
Didn't change them at all.
Yeah, imagine, they pay him $1 million. Imagine how many papers they sold with those stories.
Yeah. Oh, it's hideous. Yeah. And they exist to this day.
Yeah.
There's so much in this book.
We can't talk about everything.
Yeah, hey, listeners, you know, like we say in other podcasts, obviously this podcast is an hour long or thereabouts.
Yeah.
And these books, you know, it takes you 20 hours. Of course, we can't talk about Elton John's whole life in an hour. He doesn't talk about his whole life in the book.
No.
There's so much has happened.
Look, I can pinpoint a few things.
Go on.
He made the bloody Lion King.
Yes.
Which is massive. Yeah. Can You Feel the Love Tonight won an Oscar for Best Song.
Again, expanding his audience even further.
Yeah.
That stage in his career.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He was best friends with Versace. They were like brothers. Yeah. And then Versace got shot and they spent a whole summer looking after his ex-partner, which is lovely. Diana is a big part of his life. They're really good friends because they worked towards the AIDS Foundation together. Yeah. So they do a lot of charity work together. Diana's death devastated him. I hate brushing over this, but it's just there's so much.
But everybody knows all this.
Everybody knows. And they got asked to sing, to rewrite Candle in the Wind. They got asked. I didn't know it came from them.
Yeah.
And that became worldwide huge again.
Yeah.
It had Vegas residency.
Yeah.
I mean, basically his life is packed and it goes on and on and on because he's getting older and older and more interesting things happen to him all the time. It just never lets up. Oh, and then they made Rocket Man. Which was David Furnish. Really made
We've
that
not really
film.
Talked about David Furnish, his husband.
They were the first people to get married in a civil partnership. As soon as you get married properly, they were the first people to do it. But he was brave, but he was scared. And he thought people were going to come after him and there'd be banners and protests.
People would throw stuff at them.
Yeah, and they did that thinking that. And then they came out and everybody was supporting them and it was
a
surprise.
Apart from his own mother.
His own mother, who's a total cow, who actually said, you care more about that fucking thing you married than your own mother. And that's when they didn't speak for how many years. It's appalling. She's an appalling woman. So anyway, he's now happy and they've got a family. He's trying to step back. He says, I'm retiring. And then I'm going to do a world tour to announce my retirement, which is going to be 2 years long because I need to be there to raise my kids. So but anyway, basically, he continues to be incredibly successful, even though he stepped back.
And using his platform for the greater good. This is the thing which I read in this book, which really made me put my previous feelings aside.
Yes.
Because a lot of the criticism he's had is like, for example, he would play Russia.
Yeah.
He would do a duet with Eminem.
Yeah.
And people are like, but you're a massive gay performer. Why would you work with these people who are hugely homophobic? And I've got to be honest, at the time, I had the same opinion.
Yes.
But Elton says he goes because he won't shut down the discussion.
Yes.
If Russia is like an anti-gay country, then if he goes and does a concert, he can talk to the audience.
Yes.
And
he does. It's great. He's done a lot of good with his power.
Do you know what?
Eventually.
He's a good person.
Yeah.
And he always was. I just think that he had an unsettled childhood. He then got thrown into the crazy music industry where he achieved success really relatively
easily.
Quickly. And he was young. And then all of a sudden he was surrounded by drugs and stuff.
Yeah.
And he had all that pressure to deal with the press gun for him. And so he reacted. And of course, when you snap at people or when you act inappropriately, the press are there with a camera to capture it. And that's the thing that goes around the world.
Yep.
And I think that's what shaped my opinion about Elton John. I think he seems just like a bad tempered old queen.
Yeah.
And you know what? And
which
now
he is.
Yeah, and he is. And he admits to that. Yeah. But that's just one small part
of him. It's true. Yeah.
And the other parts of him, you know, the big heart of the man is so much bigger.
It's very complex. But thank God Rocket Man came out because a ton of people got to see the full story.
I'm going to go and watch it now.
Great.
Because I love the man now.
Yeah.
I think I even said during the recording of this podcast, why would I watch Rocket Man? I don't like Elton John.
I think you did.
And now I'm going to go and watch it.
Excellent.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Thrift Shop Biography. We love making this podcast and we're absolutely thrilled that so many of you are already listening. We're new to this and you could really help us out by leaving us a review somewhere, wherever you listen to this podcast. And if you could share us, tell your friends about us or drop some links on social media. We have a Facebook page called Thrift Shop Biography. So make sure you come over there to hear about the episodes first and what else we're up to. Okay, see you next week. And if you're new here, there are loads more episodes now to go and listen in the back catalogue. So make sure you go and enjoy them. Okay, thank you very much.